At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. It calls to us. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives richer, calmer, and frankly, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby or trails worth traveling to and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Whether you're looking for a laid-back walk with family or something more adventurous to get your heart pumping, AllTrails gives you the tools you need to get out there and find your outside. Download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
BLB, episode 170, producer Darius Dameron, Toby Altizer alongside. I'm Grant Paulson. First things first, please subscribe, please rate, please review this podcast. Do all of those things that help us to grow this thing. We are grinding. We are trying to get these podcast numbies up, but that is where we need your help. Let your friends know we do this. If you are buddies with Nats fans, if you're on a group chat like we are, a text thread for Nationals fans in your phone, drop the podcast in. Make sure they are listening. We'll read comments as we get them. If you say something nice about the show, we will read those at the end of every podcast. But Toby, with all of that out of the way, how about the boys? They have won now four of their last six. They go 4-2 on this homestand against a couple of playoff expectant teams in the NL West. We talked already about their series win over the Arizona Diamondbacks on our last pod, but a three-game set against the Dodgers. They take the first two. They had a chance at a sweep and even had a late lead in today's ball game as we tape on Wednesday afternoon after their most recent contest. And things look a lot different at 5-7 after wins in four of their last five than when they started the season 1-6.
Yeah, I mean, in reality, when you look at where they're at after 12 games, you don't feel too bad with the start that they had. You start against the Philadelphia Phillies, and that wasn't great. You didn't feel great about what you did in Toronto, but then you go 4-2 against the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers. I think you definitely take that. So, you know, it was something that early on, it was a little bit discouraging to see some of the results not look so great, especially, you know, just in the win-loss column, but they were in a lot of those ball games and it kind of flipped the other way in some of these. And it was nice to see this ball club come through when they needed it. Mackenzie Gore with a good outing against the Dodgers, a bullpen day where Brad Lord was good in making his first ever actual start. Most of the guys out of the pen that day were good, and you find a way to win that one, which kind of feels like gravy. And then Jake Irvin struggled for the first four batters of Wednesday's game and then was nails after that, was able to kind of lock in and still get six innings after almost having to throw 40 pitches in the first inning. So I think overall you have to feel really good. I think if you're Davey and the guys in that clubhouse, you feel like maybe you didn't necessarily feel like you proved anything. But at least it kind of just goes out there and shows yourself the confidence that you can have that this ball club can compete against anybody. And it's about going out there and playing hard every single day, because you never know. You run into the best team in baseball like the Dodgers. We're expecting, you know, for sure the Dodgers are going to win the series, if not win all three. And all of a sudden the Nats win the first two games of the series and had a chance at a sweep on Wednesday. So it was just really encouraging to see what they were able to do against a really, really good team in the Dodgers.
Yeah, so let's go through the series here quickly with some specifics. Starting with game one, back on Monday night when the Nats got the 6-4 win over the Dodgers. Mackenzie Gore was really good again. He's pitched at home twice. He's been magnificent in both of those games. Obviously, the 13 strikeout game where he faced the minimum in his opening day start in six innings. This particular LA start, he goes six innings of two-run ball, seven strikeouts, the only run scoring on a Shohei Ohtani third-inning home run, two runs coming home. Otherwise, he was unblemished. He's the major league leader right now with 25 strikeouts. He's got a 2.65 ERA. He was really, really good with his fastball. He got swings and misses on 9 of 27 swings against his fastball, which touched 98 on a cold night. That was really, really good to see. His curveball was also magnificent. Got some big-time strikeouts on some balls. He bounced behind the plate. I remember Kike Hernandez at least one time looked pretty foolish dropping down onto a Anita swing, but he was not alone in that game. I thought Mackenzie Gore again delivered the goods, and early on, it's only three starts. Obviously, he was very pedestrian in Toronto north of the border, nine hits in five innings, but even that start for him I thought was a huge deal because it was the kind of game over the last couple of years where he would have gotten, you know, ripped pretty good and got knocked around, and it didn't happen. He really buckled down and got out of some jams, and defense bailed him out. But because of that, you know, now two really good starts and that gutsy effort, he's off to a magnificent beginning to the season.
Yeah, I know he's got to be sick of getting asked about it, especially from me. I frankly ask him about it quite a bit. But this, again, was another example of where he showed to me that growth that we talked about coming out of spring training, not necessarily mechanically or with the stuff, because that stuff has been there, but mentally. It's about the ability to go pitch to pitch, and he gives up a two-run bomb to Shohei when he had him, I believe, two strikes in the count, and he's trying to put him away. He tries to throw a pitch in the inner half. It leaks over, and it's gone. And previous Mackenzie Gore, last couple of years Mackenzie Gore, you see him slap his knee, and he's frustrated out there, and all of a sudden he hangs another pitch, and someone else takes advantage, and all of a sudden he's one pitch away from being out of an inning, and all of a sudden the five spot's hung up, and this outing is kind of derailed. And instead of that happening against the Dodgers on Monday, he just moves on to the next pitch, realizes he made a mistake to Shohei. It didn't kill you. You gave up a two-run bomb. It sucks, but move on to the next thing, and he was back to being his dominant self again. So really, outside of Shohei, who had three hits, I believe of the five hits for the Dodgers that night, he was really good against everybody. And, you know, they didn't have Freddie Freeman in the lineup, but outside of that, it's still the Dodgers A lineup, and he's able to work through them. He's got such good stuff. To me, it's always been about, can he mature enough mentally to be an ace with that mentality, understanding that mistakes are going to happen. And it seems like he's turned the corner, and every single time out now, even when he didn't have his A stuff in Toronto, still being able to keep the team in the ballgame. I think you're seeing that next step. And I think at the end of the year, if he continues pitching like the way that he started the year and he's able to avoid the downstretch like he did last year, I think he's going to be really excited about the numbers. And I think Nats fans are going to be really excited about the numbers that he puts up.
They were also ultra aggressive in that game as well. They really were throughout the entire series. They stole seven bases against the Dodgers, but three steals in game one in that 6-4 victory. You just could tell that I think they saw something where they didn't really trust Will Smith catching the baseball and throwing it. And also none of the infielders for the Dodgers that night could catch the baseball around the second base bag. But regardless, it was a really good start from Gore. And then a rare night where, even though the bullpen was not perfect, Lucas Sims gave up a couple of earned runs. They were able to finish the job. One of the storylines, though, in this series was the usage of Kyle Finnegan in game one, because he had pitched 2 days in a row. They wanted to stay off of him very likely in the first game against the Dodgers. He'd gotten saves in back-to-back days against the Diamondbacks. But then Davey went and got him in the eighth inning for a five-out save, which it was the first time in 23 months that Davey asked anybody to get a five-out save. 2 years earlier, in May of 2023, Davey asked Hunter Harvey to do it, and that was the last time we've seen a five-out save by a National. But 30-plus pitches, five-out save for Finnegan, top of the Dodgers order, by the way, going after Ohtani and Betts. What a gutsy, just ballsy effort putting his team on his back. When they just don't have good options in the bullpen. And that particular day, I think Ferrer was down, a couple other relievers maybe either spent or not available. I guess Finney went up to Davey from what he said after he finished the eighth, and he said, I got three more outs in me if you want me. So he went and he finished the thing as he normally does. It was very much a wild ride, a little bit of a roller coaster. But he slams the door, and then obviously after 3 days with 30-plus pitches in that game, he was not going to be available for either of the final two games. But early on, Finnegan has been vital. I mean, what if he was not here? Remember, they decided against paying him what he was due. They let him go to market. They waited forever. He could have signed with anybody at any moment. He, you know, give Mark Shalaba and whoever else with the front office with Mike Rizzo a lot of credit that works with the agents and works closely with these players, because, you know, they had a pretty good feel clearly that Finnegan was going to eventually call them if he got a deal, because they waited, and eventually in spring training they bring him back. But can you imagine where this bullpen would be without him? He's got four saves and four chances. Even though he's put some runners on, his whip's not great. ERA's 1.5. He's been mostly very successful. And otherwise, the bullpen, collectively, not everybody, but just collectively, has been bad. So without him, they'd be in a real bad spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's encouraging because Kyle Finnegan, remember, the last couple of years, it's early on in the season, there's a blow-up outing in there somewhere. Maybe that's still coming. Who knows? But
normally, it's his first outing. He gave up, like, three-run homers or, you know, home runs in three-plus run games in, like, three straight years in his first outing of the season.
Yeah, it's always been something where right away it's like, not great results, but that hasn't been the case, and they've needed that because, frankly, like you said, the other options have not been reliable. So they've been able to kind of trust him, and what a great performance to go out there three straight days, five outs on your third day. I think he'd gone 13 pitches, and then he'd gone like 23 pitches, and then the next day he threw 30-plus pitches. So that is a lot of wear and tear on his arm in three straight days, but he was willing to go out there and battle for the guys, and it was really encouraging to see them find a way. And by the way, I know some people maybe, you know, questioning that decision. First game of a Dodger series, we didn't know how this was going to play out. Turns out, you know, the game two of the series on Tuesday, they got the upper hand as well and pretty handily with the offense kind of exploding. But you had no idea how the rest of that Dodger series was going to play out. When you have you're in a position to win a series opener against a team like the Los Angeles Dodgers, it's all hands on deck. If Kyle Finnegan says he can pitch, Kyle Finnegan's going to get in there because that's the guy that you trust the most. So good on him for going out there and doing it. You know, I don't know if I would have fully gone the way that Davey did there, but he trusted Finnegan and to go back out there in the ninth, and he got it done. So that was the main thing, to find a way to win that ball game, and they did that.
There was also a wow moment offensively in that game. Adding insurance, James Wood went to the opposite field on a night where the ball was not flying at all. It was really cold, left on left, slider left middle of the plate. He extended his hands and drove the ball to left center field for a home run, and it ended up starting what was, you know, a real power run for him over a couple of games in this series, because he had one of the best games of his career on Tuesday in game two of the set when he hit the two home runs against the Dodgers, third and fourth of his season at that point, as James Wood sits at four home runs now through 12 baseball games. But again, the first was almost a carbon copy, left center field, huge loft, cold night, ball not carrying. The other was pulled, which is very rare. But, man, when he pulls the ball, there are no doubters. I mean, in right field, I think it was Teoscar Hernandez, but whoever it was didn't even move. They literally, watching the replay, they didn't even turn their head to watch where the ball landed. I mean, think about theoretically the risk you're taking if it doesn't go out. But they just kind of continued to look at the infield like the pitch hadn't been thrown yet, as James Wood's home run sailed well over their head to add, you know, at that point, to the win probability and get it up to 99%, 107 off the bat, 415 feet, 30-degree launch angle. But three home runs and five at-bats at that point in that sequence. He ended up with three hits, getting on base four times, driving in five runs. I'm not going to call it a 2025 coming-out party for James Wood, because, again, he'd already done some good things. But, you know, we've seen him now make an outrageously impressive catch at the wall on this homestand in left field with his athleticism. We've seen him steal a base. We saw him in that game when he had the two home runs, beat out an infield single with elite speed. Then you had the three homers in two games. He's got four on the young season. I mean, what can this kid not do? He is as advertised. You know my take. I think he is a future superstar. I think he's still underrated as far as what he's got the potential to be here. He could be DC's Judgian type figure. I'm not saying he's going to hit 60 home runs a year, but you know he could be a perennial MVP candidate when this thing's cooking again. And I'm just so excited to get him these at-bats, to get him these everyday opportunities. One thing I will say was Davey took him out of the first game of this series in the ninth inning for Alex Call defensively when James Wood, who had already homered, would have been the second batter up in the bottom of the ninth. I found that fascinating. The next day he DH'd. I understand they're trying to get Call at-bats because he's been red hot, and we'll talk about the outfield situation in more detail in a few minutes, but you know, they also needed to get Jacob Young back in the lineup. It had been forever since he played. Like, think about it. He got two hits and was on base three times and was right back to the bench for the series finale because they need to put James Wood in the lineup, and they can't have Alex Call, who's been the hottest player on the team, not playing. But that was really, really weird to me to see in a ninth inning where, you know, I think Wood's playing a much better left field, much more comfortable than he was last year. To see him pulled from the game with him, you know, if he had just batted, maybe, I still don't love it, but maybe he was due up second. So if you give up a couple of runs and the game gets tied at that point, then it might have even been a run at that juncture. Then, you know, you're having Jacob Young bat in his spot, second in the order, chasing the Dodgers. I did not like that decision by Davey at all.
Yeah, maybe there was something going on there. He didn't get asked about it, so I'm not quite sure if there was.
Nobody asked him post-game about that?
I don't believe so. So I'm not sure if he got a little nicked up or something. But yeah, he's DH'ing the next day. And I mean, I never heard anything. James Wood talked after both games, never said anything was lingering or bothering him or anything. So I'm not exactly sure what that decision was. If it's truly a baseball decision, I agree with you. If it's a, you know, he tweaked an ankle or something that we don't know about, then maybe, you know, that's the reason. But yeah, if it's a baseball decision, I don't think that's a good one. But I mean, this series, Grant, he opened the series. Remember, CJ Abrams back in the lineup for Wednesday's matchup, but he'd missed the first two games dealing with some quad tightness in his right quad. He was batting leadoff, Grant, on Monday. And I don't know if you could sense this too, but I don't even know how to quantify it in words, but you kind of know it when you see it. He just looked like a different hitter this series. He looked locked in. He looked like he was seeing the ball well. Obviously, you see the results, but just going up there and right away in that leadoff spot, it was funny. We were talking to him. You know, that game was funny where Dustin May started the game with a pitch clock violation, and in James Wood's very laid-back, monotone, quiet self, he said, "You know, I was, you know, I didn't mind hitting leadoff, and it was weird. I walk up there, didn't know what happened. I was already up 1-0. You know, very, you know, laid back, nonchalant self, but he looked comfortable. And I don't know that that's something that he'll be up there doing a lot because CJ is going to hit leadoff when he's in there. But it almost felt like him leading off a game, Grant, like put an extra burden on his shoulders that he was like looking for. Remember when CJ had
to respond well to it?
Yeah, remember when CJ had that where they said, like, Davey challenged him saying, "You're the leadoff man," and then that second half was really, really good for him. I don't know that he did that for James, but James kind of walking up there to start the game as the first hitter, I don't know, something felt locked in. He wasn't hitting leadoff the rest of the series, but even on Wednesday when he had a pair of strikeouts, but he also had a pair of walks that were really impressive. He's always going to have those impressive walks because he's so, so patient, but it just
you mentioned, by the way, him being nonchalant. I saw the Nats tweeted out. They called him their nonchalant prince. I thought that was hilarious. I love that as a nickname, the nonchalant prince. That's pretty damn good.
I mean, everything that he does. I mean, and it's interesting. So he was Davey was asked post game. I can't remember if this is either after the first homer or after the two homer game, because, you know, that's the great thing. We're talking about three homer series here. if his leadership style is different. Like he's someone that, you know, you want to get behind and energize the guys. And like when CJ hits a home run like he did on Wednesday, there's the bat flip, there's the aura like we talk about, right, around CJ. When James Wood hits a home run, it's as if he did the most basic thing you've ever seen.
Right.
And yet no one could hit the ball out of the yard. Like CJ was able to drive the ball out, but you had to really get a hold of it, Grant, because there are probably three or four balls, maybe even more than that, this series that are probably out in the middle of July. And imagine where some of the balls that he hit would have landed if it was 80 degrees and humid in the middle of July. Like his ability to drive the ball the other way, and then he turns on one. And I like what you saw there in that second game where he hit the two home runs. The first one, both of them on first pitches, first pitch fastball, looking the other way, hits it into the red seats over there in section 100. And then the next time, first of all, then he draws a walk, and his next one, base is loaded, ends up with a five RBI game, so ends up with an RBI there. Then his next at bat gets a first pitch curveball where you can do some damage, and he pulls it. He's able to adjust it. He said he recognized it early and gets on it. That's the stuff that when you start seeing him do that, I know people worry about pull the baseball. This, I don't need him worrying about pulling the baseball. But
well, but also this, you had me at first pitch, right?
Yes.
Like you talk about this more than I do, even. But it's certainly a thing. I mean, he is so patient, and he has such a great idea, and he's so disciplined at the plate. It just seems like he's almost never quick to ambush, right? He is. I don't know what his take percentage is, but I bet you it's well above average in Major League Baseball. And even for strikes, I mean, he takes middle strikes early in counts a lot of the time. And you'd love to see him swing and do more damage on some of those pitches. So to see first pitch home runs, I mean, that was very, very cool. But, you know, just to see him get it going, swinging the way he is for power early in the season, there's a lot of guys that are going to hit 25 and 30 home runs that have zero or one home run right now, because there's only been, you know, a week of baseball, basically. It's a week and a half, 10, 12 games, and the weather's cold, and it hadn't really heated up yet. So for him, you know, the most friendly ballpark they've played in so far, based on the weather, has been Rogers Center, and he's got four bolts, and, you know, all but one of them have been at Nationals Park now, plus the multi-homer game for the second time in his career. Pretty awesome.
And by the way, remember, part of the reason that he wasn't called up a little earlier, aside from him getting injured last year, was he needed to see left-handed pitching, was the quote, right? Like, what kind of, well, multiple homers off lefties in this series. So I think he's doing just fine there.
Let's check in on the Serta counting sheep.
Why aren't we counting anymore?
Well, the all-new Serta Perfect Sleeper has the Q4 support system that helps relieve aches and back pain.
We'll never get counted again.
Nope.
Save this Memorial Day. Shop at a retailer near you.
Yeah, good point. All right, let's get to the final game of the series. Again, not really going through the specifics of play-by-play, but just pulling out some themes. K-Bert Ruiz, who had two hits in Game 2, another hit in Game 3, is continuing to get on base. I mean, he is, after a 1-for-4, hit safely now after every game in this series. In 10 of 11 games this season, he's hitting over .330. Luis Garcia, 1-for-2 with a double, drove in a couple. That was his second multi-RBI game of the season. And in that game, even though they lose to the Dodgers and they blow a chance at a sweep, could have been 3 in a row against LA, could have been 5 in a row overall, could have gotten back to .500, which would have been great as they, you know, fly to Miami. Jake Irvin, 4 batters into the game, had given up 4 runs. I mean, loud contact, right? Like single, walk, triple, homer. Basically a cycle almost for the Dodgers' first 4 batters, and it's 4-0, and he hasn't gotten it out. Dude, that is a nightmare for a starter. Like, you've waited 4 days, sat around now all day on the fifth day just to get on the mound in hopes of, you know, going out and putting your best foot forward. And for a lot of guys, you're in the toilet from that point forward mentally.
Well, and the other thing too is Jake Irvin knows taking the mound that they just had a bullpen game. So he knows the extra added weight that he has to go deep in this ball game, and he starts right away by giving up 4 runs.
Yeah, brutal. And Tobes, 37 pitches in the first inning. So to his credit, he gets 3 outs in a row, gets out of the inning. But as he was at 37 pitches, you know, I was saying to you, we were sitting next to each other watching this game at Nats Park. 40 pitches is kind of what I've always been told at any level, but even at the big league level, when you've thrown 40 pitches in an inning, bullpen needs to be up and hot and going, because you can't throw much more than that in one inning without stress on your arm and the repetitiveness becoming a real problem. So had, at that time, it was Muncy, the seventh hitter in the lineup, had he have gotten aboard one way or the other and not grounded to second, and then it's Hernandez, I think the bullpen's up. And Hernandez might even be, you know, with they'd have to slow it down, obviously, but maybe he gets one or two more batters tops. I really believe that. I don't think you could just let him throw 50-some pitches in an inning. So his day was almost done in the first. He gets the three outs, 37 pitches, and then retired 18 of 21 to close out his outing. So from that point forward, 15 out of the next 18 over the rest of his start. You're talking about five terrific innings. He gave you six innings without giving up another run, barely giving up another hit. When he gave up four runs to the first four batters against this lineup, look, I don't want to sit here and do moral victory Monday or whatever, but my God, that was super impressive.
Yeah, I think it's going to be something when he looks back on this start. I think maybe he can maybe have found something for those final five, because talking to him after the game, he was still super dejected and frustrated with his outing. Maybe not dejected, but yeah, frustrated with his outing. Like you said, like, you know, knowing that a bullpen game just happened, you're going out there, understand you got to get deep in the ball game, and you just go out there and give up four runs right away. And credit to him for that bulldog mentality, because he's like, it's a team effort. Like, I got to lock back in. I got to find a way to get as deep in this ball game as I possibly can. He gets a quick fifth inning so he can go out there for the sixth. We were both surprised that Davey sent him back out there for the sixth, but he goes out there and still has a reasonable pitch count, gets out through six innings, and it's a really, really gutty performance for him. And maybe this is something that he's kind of had a struggling start. There's no question about it. His first three starts have not been very impressive. ERA over 5.5 hasn't been good, but maybe that five inning stretch there after he struggled in the first inning can be something he can build off of, because he seemed really, really sharp. He was able to get a couple of strikeouts, only gave up the one hit, like you said, walked a couple, but looked much different than he did early in that ballgame.
Yeah, unfortunately, offensively, they just couldn't do enough. They got three runs, which I thought, just to again, not go through the play-by-play of the game, but says a lot about this club. You're down 4-0, bottom of the first. It's a getaway day. You got to get on the plane. Could have easily just viewed the game differently. They right away chip away. They have a better first inning than the Dodgers in terms of, you know, efficiency and guys reaching. They end up scoring three. By the end of the third inning, they've come back to take a 5-4 lead. Now, they couldn't hold on to it. Eventually, the bullpen blew a one-run lead. But frankly, if you're given this bullpen nine outs and only a one-run lead, you're going to lose more often than not. I'm not trying to be a jerk, but it's just what's going to happen. It's not a very good bullpen. And they got one hit, and it was a dunk shot into the outfield that should have been caught probably off the bat by Paul DeJong in the ninth inning, off of the Dodgers bullpen the entire game. So we're talking about, you know, 5.1 innings of one-hit relief. And so the bats just dried up. But I will call attention to C.J. Abrams, because he missed two games, first two games of this series, both wins. He comes back, and he immediately hits a leadoff home run. You mentioned the aura, another style profile job where he's, you know, nobody's got a better post-home run kind of 2 seconds than C.J. Abrams, in my opinion. It's the slow watch, the standstill, Bonds-esque, the dropping of the bat. I mean, he's got the whole thing going, man. He definitely has, you know, just the juice. And for him, he's got four already. We talked about James Wood having four home runs. Even with missing a couple of games, Abrams, all four in his last seven games. He is now second on the all-time list, tied with Alfonso Soriano for the most leadoff home runs in Nats history, behind Trey Turner. And he's taken to that leadoff spot, and, man, he's rolling.
So at the end of Davey's press conference on Wednesday, he really was heaping the praises on C.J. Abrams. He said, he had to correct himself because he didn't want to get too crazy, but he said, and I could pull the audio for you if we want to throw this in here. He said that he thinks that C.J. Abrams can be a 30 homer, 40 double, 50 stolen bag guy.
Wow.
Like that. That's a, he said he thinks he can hit 300 in this league. And
I mean, that's crazy. That is like not realistic.
It's not. But, you know, Davey always is going to pump up his guys. Right. Davey's always going to talk.
He doesn't say a lot like that, though.
But he does. Exactly. He doesn't say hyperbolic stuff. Right. Like he doesn't say anything outlandish. So for him to come out at the end of the press conference and basically be asked about CJ and he's like, oh, yeah, this guy, I think, can hit 300 in this league. I think he can hit, you know, 30 homers. Have 50 steals, 40 doubles. Like that's all stuff that's attainable. That's stuff that we could talk about, but to hear that from the manager of the ball club, I think it shows how they feel about CJ. And so again, the stuff at the end of last year seems very much in the past. It's not even been a topic of conversation other than a couple of times he got brought up when, you know, spring training first started. That's all in the past. They're all go. And seems like he's back, you know, being back in the lineup Wednesday is good to see. Seems like he's healthy from whatever the quad injury or whatever it was. And for him to get right back in there and take 1 yard, again, it was a difficult place to hit in terms of getting it out of the ballpark because it was kind of cold at Nats Park. And he had no issue, right? There was no issue with him getting the ball out. So he's a special hitter. It's just about staying locked in and not having those down stretches.
Well, he's gotten better and better every year. I mean, you look at some of the numbers, right? His OPS by season in the big league, 604 to 712 to 750. You know, right now it's very early, but 880. But I mean, every single year, I always talk about wanting what I call staircase projection, right? Batting average has been pretty consistent every year, 246, 245, 246. But the stuff I care more about, on base, 280, 300, 315 is going up. Slug, 320, 412, 430 is going up. And I think should go up again this year. Now, here's one area where I'll come down on him, and I just need him to make growth quickly, is defensively. He made already this season maybe the best defensive play at short we've ever seen him make. Made an outrageous play. But there are still a few too many of these routine plays that are not made and or are nearly not made, where he's had his bacon saved. In fact, I think he got hurt or was tight based on this play or maybe going into the play. When he missed the two games. But if you remember, the final game of the Diamondback series, when they won that series going into the Dodger set, was like this routine ground ball in a big spot. Finnegan's on the mound trying to nail it down. There's a runner at third coming home. And so it's a ground ball to Abrams. It's a 99 out of 100 play that you got to make. And he threw low, wide off the bag. I don't remember who the Diamondback was, but he wasn't running down the line. He basically lollygagged it, or else I think he beats it out, because Lowe gets pulled off the bag, and it was just kind of an inexcusable play. Now, I don't know what I don't know. I mean, he missed the next two games. They said he had some tightness, and maybe it happened on the throw or when he bent down, and that affected him. But here's what I just saw a play that every big league shortstop makes, and he makes, you know, 99% of the time, and he almost cost him a game kind of throwing it down the line. So that whatever that is, like, he's got to lock in. Yeah. I don't know if it's a mental thing. I don't know if it's a muscle memory thing where he mechanically gets askew, but there have been a few of those already. He had a game where he had a couple of, you know, miscues where you could have get charged him with a couple of errors. Like he's too athletic. His skill set is too good to be a mediocre defensive shortstop, and in some cases at times a below average defensive shortstop in stretches. It should not happen. He should be a well above average defender, in my opinion.
Yeah, it almost feels like it's just lapses of concentration or something, right? Like he's too talented to not be able to make some of these plays. And he seemed to be making some plays early this season going to his left, and even ones that he wasn't able to throw the guy out at first, he was getting to balls that he hadn't gotten to. So it seemed like there was going to maybe be some growth there, but he does sometimes have those lapses, like we talked about before. Those routine plays, he's got to make them routinely, and it needs to be a 100% of the time or 99.9% of the time, and it's not always the case with him. Also, real quick, the big story around baseball has been torpedo bats. CJ has fooled around a little bit with torpedo bats. He hit a bomb with a torpedo bat earlier this year. I asked him about it. He did confirm that he hit one, but he said he's probably not going to go back to it. The bomb that he hit on Wednesday, he was using a regular barrel bat. So I think he said it's just a feel thing. He didn't seem like it made that big of a difference. I think it just kind of depends upon what you're looking for. He said, you know, he felt like it really didn't make that big of a difference. It's really just all about feel, and he felt like people were making too big of a deal of it.
If you use it and you homer in that game, for him to say not a big difference, not a big deal, and then to go away from it and say he probably won't go back to it, That goes against everything I know about baseball players.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I heard Sean Casey talking about this on MLB Network, and it feels like when you choke up on a bat, he said the way that the weight is distributed almost feels like if you're choking up for two strikes or you're getting the barrel a little closer to your hands, that can be the similar sort of feel to a torpedo bat. And if you don't like the feel of it, if you don't, you know, I'd be interested if it sounds like he kind of just ordered. I didn't ask him this, but it kind of sounds like he just had these things and tried them out and just tested it out, tried it in the game, had success, obviously, with a bomb. But he didn't necessarily get tested at like the labs like some of these guys do to get fitted.
Right.
So I don't know if this perfectly fits
point.
Him or
maybe
not.
Maybe when he swung, he didn't like how it felt. Or the other thing, Toby, it could be. I wonder if we saw the home run, but maybe he used it for two games, let's say, or something. And there were like two or three times where maybe a jam shot could have fallen in or end of the bat hit might have been at some duck snort. And he either broke a bat or got nothing out of it. You know what I mean? Because there's a trade-off, right? Like, yeah, sometimes it helps you, but it's going to hurt you toward the end of the bat in a way that it didn't used to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a feel thing, honestly, for him. And maybe he just feels like he wants something that's a little more end-loaded, like a traditional bat, versus that feeling of it being a little closer to your hands. And regardless, it's he's had success with both bats. So if he ever needed to go to torpedo bat, if he's in a slump or something, he could always try it because it worked. It worked earlier.
Yeah, it certainly did. All right. Of note in that series, otherwise, as I said, the Dodgers come into town. They were the best team in baseball. They had the best record. I didn't think they played clean baseball in either of the first two games. I thought particularly in the first game, they stunk up the joint. They had visited the White House that day. They had celebrated the World Series. So maybe the Nats caught them at the right time in terms of, you know, distraction or whatever. But take advantage. They did. 2 of 3, 4 of 6 on this homestand. In a pretty good place.